And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Awesome Mania. We've been gone for a little while, but it's me, it's Mike, it's your undisputed champion, Mr. Ben Taylor.
Sup, fam?
And actually, it was brought up randomly in conversation yesterday when we were getting ready for today. It was like, this kind of happens to us around this time of year.
Yeah, it just, around this time of year, there's so much going on. You're usually working between 2 and 7 jobs. And I'm often suffering due to my health and disability. So this is a weird time of year for us.
Yeah. We'll try to get another episode in before the end of 2020, but we'll see how the schedules align and that type of stuff.
Yeah.
But we do have some shows to talk about. We got TakeOver War Games. AEW's Winter is Coming was this past week, which preface, I did not watch it, but Ben did. And then last night was Impact Wrestling, which
is going to make discussing it really, really short, which I hadn't counted on when I suggested that we discuss it, because it's not going to be a discussion. It's going to be me telling you my opinions. If only all of the content was really readily available on YouTube.
And then we have a little bit of TLC we could talk about, because there are 5 matches that are confirmed, although that's not for at least another week and a half. And then we got the news and notes around WWE, AEW, and other promotions. So we'll just start right off with the news and notes. On the WWE end, this past Monday was the last show at the Amway Center for the Thunderdome, and this Friday SmackDown will emanate from the Thunderdome in Tropicana Field in Tampa, Florida, which is where they'll be at least for WrestleMania season. Ben, have you seen the photos of Tropicana Field yet?
Nope.
It's a very interesting setup, especially with how much bigger Tropicana Field is. But one thing that has been noted about Tropicana Field, especially when having Tampa Bay Rays games going on, they've had power outages in the past, in the middle of games. So they might be making, even though they wanted to probably go with a bigger setup, they probably are keeping it around the same size as Amway Center because of that fact. Becky Lynch and Seth Rollins welcomed their child Rue to the world on
I hate that kid
on December 7th. You already hate that kid?
No, they hate that kid. Oh. They named it Rue.
But congratulations to Becky and Seth, though. Obviously, Seth is off television for the birth of Rue and talks of him being back around Royal Rumble season.
Yeah.
And the potential of maybe Becky Lynch, because before Becky gave birth, like the days leading up to it, it was showing photos of her actually working out while pregnant. So obviously she's getting herself back into that, you know, she's been keeping herself in shape throughout the entire pregnancy. And then the last, I mean, I want to use this as a tie into another thing. So apparently there's notes that Andrade and Charlotte Flair are going to be used as a couple on television.
Uh-huh.
Which obviously, you know, Andrade's been off TV since splitting off from Angel Garza and Selena Vega. And speaking of Angel Garza, lately on Raw, he's been doing vignettes backstage about giving out a rose.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, And there's nothing confirmed about this yet because nobody really knows who it could be for. But it could be Eva Marie because there is a report saying that she is on, that she is listed as on the WWE talent roster.
Man, you must be so happy.
You're
her number one fan, right?
Ever gonna live that one down?
Nope.
Ever gonna live that one down? But yeah, so that's the parent rumor for that. I do have the notes in the Punk Renee Paquette podcast episode. You and I were talking about that. There's like two or three things that were kind of noteworthy out of it. Mm-hmm. One being how Punk does not believe that the wrestlers will unionize. He talked about blanking on some stuff real quick. About getting back in the wrestling ring, that it would take a crap load of money and it has to be a really good story. And then he also talked about the Twitch stuff. Because he lambasted WWE over the Twitch stuff.
Well, I think the standing quote to take from all that is, why is it okay for Austin Creed to do G4? But Selena Vega can't have a Twitch.
Yeah, and apparently if you do, you got to do some real heavy digging for it. But apparently when the whole up, up, down, down thing got started, there was some negotiations behind the scenes to make it where they can do it and have it be a separate thing, but yet still be somehow under the WWE banner at the same time. So it's really complicated when you look at that one, when it comes to Austin Creed and the up, up, down, down stuff, because that Twitch channel is still active with main roster talent. But
that's not what was asked.
Yeah.
There's nothing about up, up, down, down asked. I said G4.
Well, and I think that's
Austin Creed won the G4 hosts thing that he'd been campaigning for.
Well, I think that's a whole part of the whole thing with the whole up, up, down, down thing.
But it's not up, up, down, down, though.
I know, but I think that could have been something where when it came out, he probably went to them and said, I want to campaign for this, and they probably worked out some type of deal behind the scenes, which is probably something that they
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. But why are they willing to deal with Austin Creed and give him permissions to go do other stuff, but not other wrestlers? That's the question.
Yeah. And actually, you know, that's another thing that was brought up was about, like, doing the movies and stuff. Because apparently WWE, what they do is they just filter it. So if they don't want a specific person like taking on a film role, or they just want to push somebody like John Cena with all the movies that he did for WWE Studios and other stuff, the studios will ask for a specific person, like one person, like apparently for THQ when they're still doing the WWE video games, they wanted CM Punk on the cover, and like for 3 years straight, they're like, no, you're doing Goldberg. No, you're doing John Cena. No, you're doing The Rock. It wasn't until that fourth year where they went, no, we want CM Punk. We don't want you to filter somebody else to us. And I think that could be a parallel for the whole Twitch thing and G4 thing when it comes to Austin Creed, because WWE views Austin Creed as the face of the video gaming side of things for the company. Just like how they're viewing John Cena as the face of the company, and he has to be the one in the movies, on the video game covers, on TV shows, all that stuff. So maybe it's that kind of parallel.
That's not how that works, though. Right? Like, with Cena, they had some, how do I put this? They had some say on how to push him because they were the one booking the matches, right?
Yeah.
They had some... They had some influence over THQ because they could pull the license, right?
Yeah.
With Twitch is something people do on their time off.
Yeah. Oh no, I completely get it, but I can see the parallels a little bit, but at the same time, I still think it's bullshit that WWE is even doing it to the talents. I think it's still stupid.
It also, you saying that Austin is the face of the video game side of things. He's not even the face of his own channel.
Well, that's true. But you see what I'm saying, though. He's like the brainchild of the whole thing.
Right. But surely when Up, Up, Down, Down is featuring talent like Tyler Breeze, Zelina Vega, Adam Cole, Cesaro, blah 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 blah, right?
Yeah.
It makes more sense to allow them to do the video game thing to then push more viewers to Up, Up, Down, Down. No?
No, definitely. I don't understand. Like, we've been talking about it for months since they put out the edict. Like, it just doesn't make sense at all. And with Zelina Vega getting released, obviously was the message of they're taking it very seriously in corporate.
Yeah.
Which sucks. Which is interesting, though, because Paige is still streaming. But unless she kind of went to Vince and said, I'm not even on TV anymore.
What are they going to do to Paige, though?
Yeah, I know. And it's like, what are you going to do to Paige? You don't even use her on television anymore. She can't wrestle anymore. So.
I mean, what are you going to do? Fire her?
And I think I saw something where she's under contract to like 2024. So. But, yeah.
There's no rhyme or reason to it, you know? It's just, I don't know.
Yeah. Any news on, that's all I had for WWE on my end. Got anything on AEW or others?
I mean, we'll get to the Kenny Omega stuff. We have a match coming up between the Young Bucks and TH2, where if TH2 win, they get an AEW title shot. Well, tag team title shot. I've said it before. I will say it again. What even is the point of having rankings?
Yep.
The last two or three challengers for the world tag titles. Now, let's see. The last four challengers for the world tag titles haven't come from the rankings. They've come from tournaments or people have just been handed title shots. Right? And the last five, maybe six AEW world title contenders have come from either tournaments or battle royals or people who have just been handed title shots.
Yeah.
And the annoying thing is, there's a team in the top five that hasn't had a title shot.
Dark Order?
No. Jurassic Express.
Oh.
Jurassic Express is in the top five, and they haven't had a match against the Young Bucks since like the second or third Dynamite. It's like, why even have the rankings at this point?
Well, like Tony Khan says, it's going to reset on January 1 when they make the Road to Revolution. And I'm like, you've already fucked this up from day one.
But it reset last year and still didn't mean anything.
Yeah. Like, it's been messed up since day one. Like, they don't know how to use the ranking system at all.
Kenny Omega, current AEW World Champion. Sorry, gonna blow my nose.
Yep. So yeah, Omega, current AEW World Champion.
Won his title shot from a tournament. A tournament that at the beginning of which he wasn't even in the top five. The TH2 have a match coming up against Matt and Nick to see if they could become World Tag Team Champions. Have a shot, right?
Right.
There are 1, 2, 3, 4 teams in the top five that have never wrestled a title match against the Young Bucks. That being Best Friends, Jurassic Express, Natural Nightmares, and Dark Order. Like, what even is the point of having the rankings anymore?
Yeah. Yeah.
Other than that, it's a fairly lean news week. Well, news cycle, should I say, in AEW terms. Because a lot of the quote-unquote news is stuff we're going to talk about when it comes to Winter is Coming. So we might as well just move on there. We're not going to talk a lot about the actual show of Impact, mainly because Mike only tuned in for the Kenny Omega segment, I think. Props to the people that wrestled on the show. They certainly gave it their all. Impact's limitations were on show, right? Some dodgy acting here and there, and a couple of other things. But one thing that was very interesting of note is this wasn't just Kenny Omega showing up on Impact. Earlier in the night, Tommy Dreamer had been like, look, dude, this is not a good idea. I've seen stuff like this happen before. I've been a part of it. It never ends well for your locker room, right? And then right before the Kenny Omega segment, Rich Swann was trying to leave the building, Rich Swann being the Impact World Champion. And security being like, sorry, the World Champion has blocked off this part of the arena. And Rich Swann went like, no, I haven't. And they went, no, the real World Champion, the AEW World Champion. And Rich Swann looked pissed off. So, yeah. There's stuff afoot. Anyway, let's take a break. Yep. And let's move on to Winter is Coming.
Yep. All right. We will take a break right here.
Sasha Kaplan here. I'm one of the co-hosts of an awesome new podcast called Voices from the Grit, where besides hearing my lovely voice, you can also hear the many opinionated musings of Ben, Mike, and Brian. Together or apart, Voices from the Grid promises to be an episode-by-episode discussion of Power Ranger history. Come check us out at thxthockey.com/VFTG and follow us on Twitter at VFTG_PR to learn more. Watch for the release date for Season 1. So grab your morphers and may the power protect you.
And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we are back from break and we are talking AEW Winter is Coming, where we had a five-match card. First up, you had the battle royal for the AEW Dynamite Diamond Ring, which would see MJF and Orange Cassidy advance to the final by last eliminating Wardlow, which means MJF has the ability to retain the Diamond Ring for a second year in a row.
Yep. It also began kind of a night-long story involving the Inner Circle. It was a good battle royal, but it's another thing that's just going to lead to someone else getting a title shot from something that's not the rankings. So, whatever.
The next match was Chris Jericho of Jake Hager and Ortiz defeating Frankie Kazarian in a singles match. And this is a one... This is, from what I've heard and from the clips that I did see, like on Twitter and stuff, this was, I heard it was a banger of a match that really had no story to it. It was just two guys just having a wrestling match.
Now, there'd been a bit of a story leading up to it, but it was very much the story of who's the better wrestler.
And obviously Jericho got the win, but as you had just mentioned with like MJF Wardlow, this also was a part of the storyline, because this is another clip that I saw where there was a lot of infighting after Jericho's match, to which led to him making the declaration of pretty much get your shit together or the Inner Circle's breaking up.
Yeah, they're doing like the ultimate. There's like four really big segments on Dynamite this week. One of which is at the end of this match, Jericho basically went, you've got a week to decide whether you want to work together or not, because otherwise we're just going to break up the Inner Circle. Yeah. This was a very good match. Arguably the best match on the card. Well worth looking up if you're a fan of either of these guys, or even if you're not.
Yeah, I definitely could tell for like some of the like the little clips that you would get that they were pulling out a lot of the stops in that match. And that match only went 10 minutes and 34 seconds. So imagine if they can get a little bit more time, those two.
Yeah.
On like a pay-per-view or something.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Because wasn't that also the very first time?
There's something else I forgot to bring up in the Battle Royal.
Yep.
Which is the very slow, continual face turn of the Dark Order. It's very, very slow. But it's very, very slowly happening.
Yeah, because wasn't there a point where Matt Hardy, who apparently is going for a slow heel turn, he it's tried to eliminate
slow about his heel turn,
but he tried eliminating Hangman Page. Dark Order saved him.
Right. So over the last couple of weeks, Dark Order have been trying to recruit Hangman. Right. And first of all, there's been nothing slow about Matt Hardy's heel turn. He's just turned into an egomaniac prick, basically. Then there's a moment in the Battle Royal where Hangman gets thrown over the top rope. And as he's about to fall off, all of Dark Order catch him and put him back up on the ring. And then he does a buckshot lariat and knocks someone the hell out, basically, but then gets eliminated pretty much right afterwards. And kind of sort of follows Dark Order down a tunnel. The Dark Order Hangman segment on BTE this week was very good. It's probably the only thing worthwhile on the entire show, but it's been that way for a while. But yeah, back to Chris Jericho and Frankie Kazarian. I think I saw a tweet where someone, like, one of these people is 47, the other one's 50. Right? Like,
and if I remember right, it was also billed that this is also the very first time that Kazarian and Jericho has ever wrestled each other too.
I don't know about that.
Like in one-on-one.
I don't know. I honestly couldn't tell you.
Right.
It's definitely the first time they've wrestled in AEW.
Yeah. So next up you had Dr. Britt Baker DMD with Rebel defeating Layla Hirsch in the singles match.
Legit, Layla Hirsch is legit. She's amazing. She made Britt Baker look good. Enough said.
Yep. Then you had Darby Allin and Cody Rhodes of Arn Anderson defeat Team Taz of Ricky Starks and Powerhouse Hobbs with Taz. Which then saw, at the end, Sting come out. Which I actually read that Tony Schiavone came out and said that Tony Khan made it an edict that Tony Schiavone had to be the one to say Sting's name first on AEW television. Which I guess that makes a lot of sense because of the history with Schiavone and Sting, but
I mean, no one says it better.
Yeah.
It's like Corey Graves calling the Kinshasa, right? Like
only Corey Graves could call that move.
Sting.
Cool video that they use for him.
I have been trying for a week to decide how I feel about this. Right. Because I know that AEW have a habit of putting younger wrestlers with older wrestlers to teach them the ways and the means and that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And I also know that AEW aren't stupid enough to use Sting as a full-time performer, right? There could be a cinematic match here or there, or like just a cool spot or pre-recorded this or whatever, right? To make sure they get it right. But also part of me is like, is this WCW? There's a Rhodes, there's Sting, there's the Horsemen, there's... The only thing they're missing is Ric Flair, right?
There's former WWE talent all over the place.
Yeah.
And it's like the one thing I sent you that Justin Barrasso of Sports Illustrated said, like, yeah, you mentioned like the cinematic matches. There's probably going to be occasional tag team matches to like really like have them be part of the match, but keep them really protected. And it's like, we're talking about a 61-year-old with a really bad neck.
Yeah.
And the thing is that, you know, as it also came out, the reason that Sting decided to leave WWE, not re-sign with them, and then sign with AEW, is because Vince said no to a cinematic match between Sting and The Undertaker. And that's why Sting left. He also wasn't happy with how, like, he was only used, like, as a part-time special attraction. He didn't want to be that. And he's going to be used weekly, not in a physical capacity all the time, but like presence wise.
Yeah, he'll be on the show.
Yeah, he'll be on the show. He'll be a regular.
Or he'll be backstage doing something.
Yeah. And I get that, but it's like, dude, enjoy retirement or something. Like, do what Taker did at Survivor Series and finally call it a career.
I'll believe that when I see it.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing we saw at Survivor Series convinces me we're not seeing Taker at Mania.
Okay, we could talk about the Taker Survivor Series stuff later because we're on AEW right now, because yeah, we could have a completely separate discussion about how they handled that entire thing separately.
The long and the short of it for me, to be honest, is... I've come to the conclusion, right, that no one in wrestling, no one I ever see announce a retirement is retired.
Yeah.
Right? That's the first thing I've come to the conclusion of. The second thing is, I don't know why they're drawn back, right? I don't know whether it's the rush of the crowd or whatever. But at the same time, I don't get it, right? Yeah. So I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, they were wrong for doing this, they're wrong for doing that, right? Yeah. All I know is if I were in that position, I would have sat back and drank in Vince's money. Right. I'd have got paid to stay home and not do anything.
Yeah. I mean, I could say this right now. It's like, my dad's been retired for several years. He ain't clamoring to go back to work. He's happy just doing what he wants to do and right, still get paid, you know?
Right. So all I can do is say, I don't understand why these people keep coming back.
Yeah.
That being said, there is also something to be said about how they're going to use Sting. I think that's going to be incredibly key as to whether this works or not.
Yeah.
Right? Because quite frankly, they can do all of the pre-recording and tag matches and cinematic stuff they want. But if he's moving around like he's 60 with a bad neck, he's still going to look like he's 60 with a bad neck. Right, so it's utterly dependent on how they handle this.
Yeah. And of course, we're recording on Wednesday, December 9th, which this episode will come out today as well. This is going to be the first time that Sting speaks tonight.
Yeah, this is the second of the four big things that are scheduled for Dynamite tonight.
Yeah. The next thing, which we'll get
well, there to- was, it was also revealed right after this that this week on Dynamite, Shaq will speak because you're building up to Shaq Cody, apparently.
Which is weird because
that's a match that no one wants to see.
Well, it's not only that it's interesting like that, but because you also have the whole Sting, Darby, Cody thing going on too at the same time. So it's like you have Sting and Cody, and now you have Shaq and Cody.
Yep, because if you aren't like, I guess it's what I've talked about before. Like everything in the AEW men's division, in some way, shape, or form, goes through or tracks back to Cody. Everything.
Yep.
Which then brought us to our main event,
which is Kenny Omega defeating Jon Moxley for the AEW World Heavyweight Championship. That also saw outside interference from Don Callis. Right.
So before the match, Don Callis had been invited in by Tony Khan, Don Callis had done commentary on Hangman Kenny, right? So Don Callis was invited back, and he went to Kenny Omega, and he went to Jon Moxley. And he basically said to both of them, we don't want this turning into a repeat of your last match. We should have a gentleman's agreement to not involve weapons or anything hardcore, basically. To which they both agreed. And then in the tail end of this, I think it was like nearly a half hour match.
The total runtime of the match was 28 minutes and 31 seconds.
Which was far too long, by the way. It did not earn that 28 minutes.
Kind of like when we were at Full Gear and they had the lights out match.
Yeah. Except with the lights out match, there was this very slow escalation of the violence. So there was a reason for it to keep going, right? This was basically 24 minutes of wrestling ? And then 4 minutes of shenanigans. And it started when Jon Moxley took Kenny to the outside and delivered a paradigm shift into like these boxed heaters that are on the outside, because Daly's Place being outside and it's starting at like 9:30 at night, the temperature was rapidly dropping, right? So Kenny takes a paradigm shift into one of those, and the referee's trying to be like, look, he's hurt. Stop, stop, stop. Moxley throws referee out of the way, rolls Kenny back in the ring. Callis gets up from commentary and is like runs over, grabs the microphone, is like, hey, he's hurt. Stop, stop. At which point, Jon Moxley punches Don Callis. Kenny Omega grabs the microphone, hits Jon Moxley once, busts him open, gives him 4 V-triggers, a one-winged angel, and it's the end of the match. And it's like, oh. That's how Jon Moxley's 9.5-month title reign comes to an end, I guess.
Yeah, that's... I love all those shenanigans that they play. But yeah, I mean, I definitely agree that if it's going to be something like that, they probably should have just shortened up the match a bit.
Yeah, like I've got no problem with the ending in shenanigans, especially with what it's setting up.
Yeah,
right. It's just
it's kind of like having an hour-long marathon match and then just ending it on a whim.
Yeah. Yeah. The ending just didn't feel satisfactory. And not in the fact that it was shenanigans. Shenanigans was fine, right? but it was the fact that after everything they went through at Full Gear, after everything he went through with Eddie Kingston, with everything he's gone through in other matches, all it took was a microphone to the head and four V triggers and a one winged angel to put Moxley down, right? It didn't feel right. Also, controversial opinion, I think the V trigger is so boring when he does it so often. Like, doing it once and just getting that massive smack out of nowhere is great, right? But the V trigger is just, it's getting to super kick levels of move at this point, right? It's not even a special move at this point. It's a move he spams, right? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. So that was Winner's Coming, which then led us into...
Right, so then at the end of the match, after the three count, Kenny Omega and Don Callis basically start running through the backstage area, past like Tony Khan, past a bunch of the talent, everyone being like, what the fuck, dude?
Actually, you clearly hear Tony Schiavone say, because I watched that clip,
this of is running bullshit. The back,
this is yeah. bullshit. I'm like, whoa, he got away with that one.
And then they get in a car, and he says to Alex Marvez, if you want to know why we did what we did, or if you want to know what's going on, tune in this Tuesday on Impact. And the wrestling world collectively shit itself. Even though this kind of thing's been on the horizon for a while, right? One of the things that was very notable about Winter is Coming is there were like three or four mentions of Okada, right? Like, it was just very interesting. This has been one of the things that has been teased and talked about for a while, and it's kind of making sense that this is the way that they introduce it, right? Is this these working with other companies? But yeah, like, Winter Isn't Coming was very much a show of two matches and a show of two segments, right? It was Jericho Kazarian and the main event, and then it was Sting appearing and Kenny buggering off with the title. It was very much that. And fast forward to last night at time of recording on Impact, Kenny and Don Callis basically cut what is effectively a nothing promo, right? It was... So, I messaged Mike, like, Tuesday, maybe? No, it was last Friday, and I said, what's the betting this is going to be Impact's highest watched TV ever, right?
Yeah.
And Mike was like, I don't even know if I have access, AXS. Yeah. And I went, you know, you could watch it on their Twitch channel, my dude. And he was like, oh, okay then. Which led to them at one point having like 50,600 and something concurrent viewers. Their peak concurrent viewers were 50,686.
Pretty good.
49,000 of which were spamming, "We don't care about TNA, just give us Kenny Omega."
That's not as good.
And as I said before, a lot of the talent on Impact worked their hideys off, but the others were definitely shown for their... I never thought I'd see a commentator that made me miss Michael Cole, but Josh Matthews is horrendous.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that. So yesterday, before Impact even aired, I was reading an article about how people really cringe with Josh Matthews, and they were just really hopeful that he was not going to be involved with Omega at all. Like, because they don't like him.
I think he does a good job as an interviewer, right? I just don't think he...
He's a commentator.
He's a commentator.
Yeah.
And Madison Rain isn't much better, right? Especially when you compare it to someone like Beth Phoenix on NXT. But on Impact, there was basically... At the beginning of the night, they showed a bus rolling up, and then in the very last segment of the night... The funny part was, is people were coming into the chat on Twitch and being like, "Has Kenny spoken yet?" And I was like, there wouldn't still be 50,000 people here if he'd been on already, because they most of them would have buggered off.
Yeah, because that was the thing that you and I were talking about last night, is because I was like, because I finally got off my stream and I was doing all my post work, and I was like, because I wasn't watching, and I was like, they're probably saving Kenny for last, because there's no way in hell they're going to put him on at the beginning of the show or in the middle of the show. Because
the only way they would have put him on like earlier in the show is if he was coming back at the end.
Yeah.
Like, and clearly coming back at the end.
Yeah, so it was like, there's no way in hell they're not going to put him on last.
Yeah.
So.
That being said, the promo that was there was basically a nothing promo. It was more them just being like, we've been working on this for years kind of thing, right? And talking about the history between Callis and Omega, which we already knew. And Omega intimating that he wants to go around and collect belts from other companies. Right?
Who does that sound like?
Right. Which led to them also revealing that Kenny is going to make a huge announcement tonight on Dynamite, which is the fourth of four big announcements or big segments that are scheduled for Dynamite tonight.
Yeah, and it should be also
and not noted, one of them is an actual match.
Yeah, and it should be noted that also on Impact last night, Tony Khan actually paid for an advertisement on Impact, where it's him and Tony Schiavone doing like a retro style commercial, where Tony's like, "I may just buy Impact and but tune in tomorrow for Dynamite," and stuff like that. It was interesting.
Yeah, I'm interested to see where this goes, to be honest. I'm not going to say if I like it or not yet. The one thing I will say is this, right? If AEW are consistent with their own internal storytelling, right? I cannot wait to see what the Young Bucks do tonight. Because when Hangman Page cost them a match, right, they started super kicking announcers and being on the verge of turning heel, and they took Kenny's side in things, right?
Yep.
And now Kenny's done this. We're either going to get an escalation of that from the Young Bucks. We're going to get absolutely no storyline consistency whatsoever, and the Young Bucks just shrug it off. Or we're going to find out that the Young Bucks are in on it too. Right? But that wasn't again, this week's BTE intimates the Bucks had no idea what was going on. So who knows?
Yeah. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I know, because we're about to go into NXT now.
Yep.
For tonight on NXT, we're getting Finn Balor back.
Yeah, and we're going to be having the return of Karrion Kross soon as well, which I think 90% of us could do without.
Yeah.
I have never seen someone that, at least in NXT, right? I've never seen a character, in this case, Karrion Kross, that so many people were glad wasn't champion anymore. I don't think a lot of people enjoyed the monster push he got. I don't think a lot of people enjoy that kind of...
I definitely know that a lot of people did not like him just running through Tommaso Ciampa.
Yeah.
The way he did.
Yeah.
Like, when we saw, like, all right, we're going to get Ciampa versus Kross. This is going to be a good match. This is going to be a hard-hitting battle between these two guys. And it was just a steamrolling.
It was like 90 seconds, right? Some stupid like that.
It wasn't 90 seconds, but it was like, it wasn't satisfying to watch.
Right.
Stuff is to say.
But, like, I just don't. I very rarely have I seen the NXT people I know, right? I know that the NXT fans as a larger whole must be behind him. Otherwise they wouldn't have continued with the experiment. But like most of the people I know that watch NXT are like, you don't like Karrion Kross. And let's be honest, 90% of the people who watch NXT like Karrion Kross because Scarlett's with him. Let's be honest.
Yeah. I mean, she's the one who kind of makes the character for him, though.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'm very surprised they've kept her off TV.
I think when we start getting closer to Kross coming back officially, we're going to start seeing Scarlett on TV as the preface to him coming
back. See, I would have had her just like lurking in the background, watching people and like that kind of thing. But
yeah, which would make sense. But there's also been a lot of other things just going on in NXT in general too. So
yeah.
And yeah. It hasn't helped with the fact that Balor's essentially been off television for like 6 to 8 weeks. So like that idea of having Scarlett around wouldn't have worked anyways because the champion's been off television, essentially.
Yeah.
But with that said, we're going to go right into TakeOver War Games. There was a dark match. It was really done for the people watching via the Zoom and in the audience, which was Legado del Fantasma defeating Kurt Stallion, Ashante the Adonis, and August Gray. There's no time or anything like that because it was like apparently the match happened before they did the pre-show.
Yeah.
So kicking off the main card of the show, you had Team Candace of I can't remember hers, damn it. I'm sorry.
Candace Q Wrestling LeRae Gargano.
Okay. Dakota Kai, Raquel Gonzalez, and Toni Storm defeating Team Shotzi of Shotzi Blackheart, Ember Moon, Rhea Ripley, and Io Shirai in a War Games match, which went 35 minutes and 22 seconds. It would actually see Raquel Gonzalez get the pinfall on Io Shirai to get the victory for Team Candace, which obviously, you know, you could tell over the last like couple months they've really been building up Gonzalez.
Yeah, they've been very, very, very slowly building her up. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and her getting the pin on Io is actually, I don't want to say it's going to put the rocket on her back, but it's definitely going to give her a lot more credence as she goes towards a program with Io Shirai for the title.
Again, I wouldn't say it's going to slap the rocket to her back, especially not like not to the degree that Rhea Ripley had a rocket strapped to her back this time last year, because there's no Survivor Series to follow it up, right?
Yeah.
But they've been building Raquel for a while, and it makes sense for her to get the win here to build another viable threat to EO.
Yeah. And it should also be noted that Team Shotzi was the one with the advantage in this match, which is the first time that we've seen a face team with the advantage going into War Games, at least in NXT.
Yarp.
Overall, solid match, though. Next up, you had Tommaso Ciampa.
So, here's the thing for me with this match, right?
Right.
Is what's the terminology I'm looking for? I think that they need to stop having a men's and a women's War Games match.
This is the only second time they've done that, though, right?
Right, which is why they need to stop doing it. Because, or at least they need to do it slightly differently with the card, right? Because it just, after this match, anyone who was coming on to follow them had no hope, right? I just think that they either need to only do the main event War Games match or do both War Games matches towards the end of the evening. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Like, kind of have them like back to back as the last two matches, maybe.
Yeah, because the only thing that can follow a War Games match, that's not true, because then you just get fatigue of the cage, right? Like,
or maybe have it like one be the third to last match, put in a filler match that you know is more of a filler match, and then do the main event with War Games.
Yeah.
Because you know whatever the filler match is going to be, you know, yeah, it's a meaning story, but you know it's not going to be overall hurt by the overallness of their story because of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
overall, though, good War Games match. Nice to see them change it up a little bit with the who had the advantage. Nice to see a heel team win for once.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie though. They need to change how they get the advantage, because they've also done it like I think two or three years in a row now where you have to have a ladder match. and it's always like a few days before the actual War Games match.
I like that.
I mean, I like it too, but I mean, at the same time, it's, you know, maybe change it up a bit, you know, every once in a while.
To what?
Well, instead of having both matches have the same match type to get the advantage, uh-huh. Maybe, okay, all right, for the women, we're going to do a ladder match. For the men, maybe go for a table match or something, or do a different type of gimmick to change it up a little bit.
Ladder match makes the most sense.
Especially the fact, and we'll get to this when we get to the main event, the tables probably would have worked better for the men because of what Pat McAfee and his group was doing.
I disagree. If you're going to have it be a gimmick match, ladder match makes the most sense. Yeah. If you want to have... I would have no objections to it just being whoever wins a normal match.
Yeah, that would work too.
Right? If you're going to make it a gimmick match, ladder match makes the most sense. Like, just yeah. Plain and simple.
Yeah. Sadly. No, and I agree with that too. So, next up, you had Tommaso Ciampa take on Timothy Thatcher in a singles match.
What a shame that this match had to follow the War Games match.
Yeah.
This was two people just beating the ever-living shit out of each other. And it was fantastic to watch.
Yeah. Definitely a great match. Ciampa would actually get the victory at the end after 16 minutes and 46 seconds. So overall, a good match.
What did you think of it?
I enjoyed it. I liked it. I liked the back and forth. I love the physicality between the two. Thatcher has
your favorite spot?
Oh God, I can't remember spots offhand. But one thing that I do remember is like this is like there's something about Thatcher in these big matches, and he's always bleeding from the mouth. Like he's always like somehow. But I actually somebody said this on Twitter, and I don't remember who. It might have been a BGB group or whatever. But somebody said, how great would it be if something like this, like the story between Ciampa and Thatcher, continued a bit longer and they brought back the fight pit? Maybe not with Ciampa, but Thatcher could be a good person to bring the fight pit back for. But it'd just be dependent on what opponents.
Right. Here's the thing, though, right? Is losing this match very much like he's lost two or three high profile pay-per-view matches now, right?
Yeah.
He's got to start winning soon. Thatcher, right? Like, I don't know.
I think his last huge win was actually over Riddle in the pit fight. I think that was his last big, big win.
Yeah.
So, next up, you had Dexter.
Matt Riddle, who's being put in a tag team with Jeff Hardy.
The Hardy Bros.
Which they're going to... nickname wellness policy violation waiting to happen.
Or is they're really going to call them on television, the Hardy Bros. Would you like some bro nuts later, Ben? No. That was possibly the weirdest thing on Monday Night Raw. Next up, we had Dexter Lumis versus Cameron Grimes in a strap match. Which would see Dexter Lumis defeat Cameron Grimes via submission. This was an okay match. It was actually the shortest match on the card, which I rightfully agree with that.
We're once again...
This is one that just needs to end.
Yeah, this feud needs to end. These two need to be brought apart. And Cameron Grimes needs to get to a feud he can win. Because his stick doesn't work if he keeps losing.
Yeah, especially the fact that he's always going on about, like, to the moon and stuff like that. Like that, you know, the honeymooners line.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be winning to make people want to believe that. So.
Yep.
Next up, you had the triple threat match for the NXT North American Championship as Leon Ruff defended against Damian Priest and Jonathan Q wrestling Gargano. And we would actually see Gargano pick up the victory after getting help from the Ghost Faces, or as everyone joked, all the Retribution rejects. And then
Retribution made that joke.
I know. It would also be revealed that the main person under the Ghost Face mask would be Austin Theory. So the ranks of the Garganos has been growing. So now you have Johnny, Candice, Indy Hartwell, and Austin Theory now.
It was quite funny that when he revealed himself, he did a take on the old Mr. McMahon line. Instead of it being, it was me, Austin, it was me all along. It was me, comma, Austin. It was me all along. I quite like that.
Yeah, but that's what we call good creative right there. Taking something from the past. Or improvisation, I guess. But yeah, so Gargano is now the first ever three-time champion.
Yep.
For any title in NXT.
Yep.
And I remember having this conversation after he won. Because a lot of people were upset that Leon Ruff lost. First off, Leon Ruff had a really good showing in this match.
Yeah, there's a moment in this match where he does like a springboard corkscrew cutter, right?
Yeah.
I remember the days when Ember Moon debuted the Eclipse and the internet collectively shit itself. This springboard corkscrew cutter is way more difficult than the Eclipse, but everyone's just like, yeah, whatever. Like, no one's talking about it.
But I just want to put this out there because this was part of the conversation. One, I 100% agree with everyone that Leon Ruff needs to still be focused on television 100%.
For sure.
He needs it. But also, I truly believe that Gargano needs to have a lengthy reign with this title because all of his title reigns have been very short. And Gargano, especially for this story that they're building with the Garganos, he needs to have a long reign. And I am 100% okay that at the end of this long reign, that it's Leon Ruff being the one to actually take the title off of Gargano.
Agreed.
Like, because it would be the perfect full circle moment to do it that way. So, but yeah, definitely 100%. I'm agreeing with a lot of people saying Ruff needs to continue to be featured on NXT television.
Yeah, he had a hell of a showing.
Yeah.
And it would be a disservice to him if he were not continued to be featured.
Yeah. And then finally, we have the main event match of the Undisputed Era versus Team McAfee, which featured Pat McAfee, Pete Dunne, Danny Burch, and Oney Lorcan in a War Games match that went 45 minutes and 1 second. And it would see Undisputed Era come out as the victors.
So, funny story about this, right?
Yeah.
I was watching this match, and then right as McAfee comes into the match, the network had a moment.
Oh.
Kicked me out.
Oh.
I come back, and it's like, you must be subscribed to watch NXT TakeOver War Games. I'm like, I am subscribed. So I go into my little drop down. My account's like, subscription, active. I'm like, okay. So I go back to War Games. Nothing. I didn't get to finish watching the War Games match until the next morning.
Oh, that sucks.
That was real shitty.
Yeah. I will say there were moments, because I know that there have been murmurs about, like, originally wanted to break up Undisputed Era.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they did some signal virtuing in the match, because, like, there was, like, you know, Pat McAfee brought in tables that had, each table had a painting of the Undisputed Era logo on it and a name of a member. And I'm, like, looking at it going, like, this is really interesting. There was a moment I thought Bobby Fish probably was going to be the one to turn. Because when I was watching it, what table was the last one to be standing until the very end?
Yeah.
Bobby Fish's. You know, so it was like, it was kind of interesting how they did that. And like, that kind of comes with storytelling a little bit, because it's like, even the littlest things like that could really like turn a story a certain way. But then, of course, you saw Bobby Fish put Pete Dunne through that table.
I think if anyone's, he put Danny Burch through the table.
Oh, yeah, Danny Burch.
If there's going to be a turn, it will be on NXT this week.
Yeah.
Mainly because that felt a lot like the Shield beating Evolution, right? And then, like, the end of it being, and then the end of that being, like, Seth turning on the Shield, right?
Yeah.
If there's ever going to be something that, if they ever want to do like a big thing, it's going to be this week, because they've got to go against like Sting and Shaq and Kenny and,
yeah,
right, like
all the stuff.
Hopefully they don't do it. Keep the boys together, let them have a face run. They deserve it. They've basically carried the company over the last like 4 or 5 years, right? Like,
yeah,
the Undisputed Era have been the backbone of NXT for a while now.
I definitely agree. But no, overall, fantastic match. Again, McAfee, not a fan of his personally, but he has to get the respect that he deserves. He handled himself really well in the War Games match, for, and not only that, but just also for his second match period.
Yeah.
So he definitely deserves the credit he deserves, or that he gets.
I like I like a comparison I read somewhere recently that is Pat McAfee is the new Shane McMahon. He's not paid his dues. He's egotistical. He's all about the money, but yet he goes so hard to try and pop the boys, right? Like, the thing with McAfee in that match is, yeah, he didn't do a lot, but what he did was
noteworthy.
Yeah.
Like, he did, and then, he did that senton off the top of the cage.
He took the table bump, all the other stuff, right? And then what was really great was, if you watched his standard show
the next day
he was in a neck brace.
Yeah,
like, he gets it, right? Like McAfee gets it. So
yeah, no, that was definitely props to him, though.
It
definitely
might be my favorite War Games match in NXT to date. Like, the the opening, I mean, you know why, I mean, if you know me, you know why the opening between Dunn and O'Reilly was, it speaks to me, right? Like, and good to see, like, it's nice to see Oney and Danny Burch getting the spotlight for a while. I've been fans of theirs for a very long time. And then good to see a really despicable heel in McAfee get his comeuppance, right? And nice to see Kyle get the pin and not Adam Cole. I was expecting Adam Cole to get the pin on Pat McAfee, but nice to see Kyle get the
pin.
The pin after the knee drop.
Yeah, it was so much right was done with that match.
Yeah. What was your favorite spot in this one?
Spot on this one, oh man. I probably have to definitely go with McAfee doing the senton off the top of the cage.
All right. What was your favorite spot that wasn't on Twitter?
Well, I was watching it live, so I was
right. But what was your favorite spot that wasn't on Twitter?
Oh man, there was just there's so many good spots of that match, though.
Pick one.
There really was. I mean, definitely. I definitely like it's probably all out of the spots probably on Twitter, but like definitely like when McAfee got his comeuppance by being put for the table.
Uh-huh.
That was a good spot. Riley getting the pin was another good one. So, I mean, there's just, I think the overall storytelling, it's not really a spot, but it's something that was kind of done throughout the match. And it was something that Pete Dunne was doing. And that was constantly working the fingers and the hands of like O'Reilly and Fish and Cole and Roderick. Like the fact that he kept applying pressure to that body part on all four of them throughout the match.
One of my favorite things was like, there's a moment where he's like manipulating Bobby Fish's fingers, right? And then like 20 seconds later, Bobby Fish just kicks him in the head really, really hard. And you have Pete Dunne has this look of this moment on his face like, huh, maybe I should stop working on the fingers.
But it's that continuity though of Pete Dunne. Cause like we see it so much from him too, just in like a regular singles match where he just works a limb and he really picks it apart.
Yeah.
And it's just something that I really like, you know, just in a match, especially in something that's so chaotic, like a War Games match, to see that type of continuity throughout the match is really nice.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're right. I mean, I also really liked There was the section right before you had all four members of the era with Pat McAfee. There was that section where they did the, what you call it?
Oh, the kicking the shit out of him?
Yeah, they had like the three of them trapped between the ropes of the cage. And...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, we're like, so they had the three of them. They had Dunn, Lorcan, and Birch, like, between the ropes and the cage.
Yeah.
And all four members would come in. It would be like, knee strike, kick, knee strike, body slam, knock them down. And then they'd do it again to the next person, and then do it again to the next person. And then they just eliminated all three of them. And then they just surrounded McAfee, and they just... stomped a mud hole through his ass.
Yeah, it was like, really cool.
That was a great moment too. Like that's why it's hard to pick one because there's just so many good moments in that match.
Yeah. Overall, I'm very, very excited. I mean, I've been saying for a while, but Wednesday nights is really good for wrestling right now. So I hope you all enjoy it as much as you should.
Yep. So that was TakeOver War Games. Real quick, I'm just going to run through what has been confirmed so far, even though there's a week and a half left still.
The TLC.
So far, real quick, we have a TLC match for the WWE Championship as Drew McIntyre will defend against AJ Styles. You're going to have a singles match between The Fiend, Bray Wyatt, and Randy Orton. A tag team match for the WWE Women's Tag Team Championships, where Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler are going to defend against Asuka and Lana. You're going to have a TLC match for the Universal Championship as Roman Reigns will defend against Kevin Owens. And then a singles match for the WWE SmackDown Women's Championship between Sasha and Carmella. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe if they've added any more matches, especially for titles or the current title matches that are on the card that don't have stipulations, to have some form of stipulation added to them. Like, I can see the women's tag team title match having a table match stipulation just simply because of the whole thing with Lana and Nia Jax.
Yeah, Nia Jax continues to be absolute shite. I don't know if you saw the match they had on Raw last week, or was it this week? I can't remember. But like, there was this moment where like Nia ducked under a clothesline, and then like Lana was supposed to pull the rope down, and Nia was supposed to fall out of the ring, but Nia just stopped moving. Lana pulled the rope down, and Nia went, "Oh shit!" and then ran out and fell out of the ring. It's like,
But I know somebody actually made an interesting comment, and I want your opinion on this. Do you think WWE, with Shayna Baszler always taking the pin in this tag team, that they're protecting and building up Nia rather than protecting and building up Shayna Baszler as they should be?
Well, yeah, that's exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
If they spend some time building Shayna into an actual threat, right?
I mean, they built her as a threat at a freaking Elimination Chamber when she freaking murdered everybody in the match.
Right, and everyone was into it. But then, I don't know.
Like, can we please report that murder, please, that Shayna Baszler just did?
Yeah, yeah.
And then, speaking of murder, the AEW rankings.
Yeah, so Mike, during one of our breaks, I was like, oh, I've got my Twitter up to make sure that the rankings haven't come out. And I was like, the rankings came out. They're the ones I actually referred to earlier.
Yeah, I just didn't see it on Twitter, that's all.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm like looking at it, and so Abaddon for the women's is the only one who hasn't had a title shot and is in the top five.
Right, but she's also the one who's number one contender right now.
Yeah. Shouldn't the number one contender be ranked number one in the rankings?
No, it should be the person in the rankings that hasn't had a title shot against the current contender, the current champion.
Yeah, this.
Right, like, I can understand. If no one in the rankings had had a shot against Hikaru Shida, it should be number one, right? But from what I can tell, the only person who hasn't had a shot against Hikaru Shida here is Abaddon, right?
Yeah.
So it makes sense that she's the current challenger.
Yeah,
this is what I mean by they could solve every ranking problem they have by just resetting a person's record to zero when they get a title shot.
Yeah, because like I'm looking at it right now, and it's like, yeah, you're right. Like, because all of them have had title shots. But yet, Abaddon is fifth.
With a 5-1 record, by the way.
Yeah. And Serena Deeb, who has had a title shot and is also the NWA Women's Champion, she's 4-2 and she's ranked third.
Yeah. above Penelope Ford, who's 11-5. So 7 wins count less than one lot, than like 3 losses.
Yeah. And now I'm like looking at the tag team one. And TH2 is not even on the rankings.
That's what I was telling you earlier.
Well, that's why I wanted to look. That's why I wanted to
point about that.
I know, and that's why I wanted to look at it. And I'm like, oh man.
I literally did a whole news segment about the fact that TH2 aren't even in the rankings.
Oh my god, this is my brain.
And none, with the exception of FDR, who lost the belts to the Young Bucks, none of those teams have had a title shot against the Young Bucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
So your number one contenders should be Best Friends.
How is Natural Nightmares with a 9-2 record higher in the rankings than a 14-2 Dark Order?
I don't know.
It's so confusing. Yes, that is a great notification that we should probably just move on to something else besides the AEW rankings. So
I have no idea how that works, man. I've been saying for 2 years now.
Yeah.
If they just reset everyone's record to zero when they had a title shot, right? None of this would be a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. So before we go to positive, can we talk about Taker's retirement real quick, please?
Sure.
Okay. What did you think about the whole segment on Survivor Series for Taker?
It was a waste of fucking time.
So
trot out like 20 legends, play all of their themes, let them do complete intros, and then tell them to fuck off so Vince McMahon can talk.
Now, see, and it's funny because Godfather has been responding to people's comments on Instagram about it, too, and he didn't like how they booked it. Like, I get why they brought out all the legends, because it's a la like the way they did with Shawn Michaels, Ric Flair, when they retired after their matches at Manias and stuff like that. But them disappearing outright was really weird. Like, why didn't they just put him, like...
why didn't they just leave him in the ring while Vince was talking?
Yeah, or if Vince didn't want him in the ring when he was talking, have him outside the ring or have him behind that barrier.
Mm-hmm.
Like that way they're still seen, because I think that would have brought more credibility to the whole thing, because it was just so weird that they left. But I will say, you know, I liked Taker's speech at the end where he pretty much says that it's time to let the Undertaker rest in peace. And I love the thing where they did the hologram with Paul Bearer to end.
Yeah, me too.
I think with that ending, that lasting image of Taker with the hologram Paul Bearer, I think that is going to make it more viable, to make it more believable that Taker is going to remain retired, especially the fact that it also just came out recently that Triple H has been... has come out and said that he has been talking to Undertaker, and it's probably going to happen next year, but Taker will probably become a coach in NXT.
Right, but that doesn't mean he's going to stay retired. Look at Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
Right? It may not be this year, it may not be next year, it may not be 5 years from now, right? But eventually, some Saudi prince is going to pay $1 million for Taker to put on the coat again, and he's going to do it.
Yeah. But we'll see. I mean, this is one of those where it's going to be a let's wait and see what actually happens. So we'll wait and see. Positives in wrestling.
I just one last thing about the retirement.
Yeah.
For me, I'd have done it in two segments, right? I'd have done the Vince McMahon stuff and stuff in the ring, right?
Yeah.
And I would have had the legends do like video tributes throughout the night, right? because at least then they get to say something, right? It was just like, hey, look at this and this and this and this and this. Oh, no. Anyway, yeah, carry on. Sorry.
Positive side of wrestling.
What you got?
I'm actually going to go with Pat Patterson. I mean, I know it's a sad and unfortunate thing that he passed away. Mm-hmm. But, and I think it was Beth Phoenix or Natalia on Twitter that said it best. Pat, with the exception of NXT, got the 10 bell salute and tributes on all three shows. He did not get the 10 bell on NXT, but he got it on Raw and SmackDown. And the tributes that have been coming out for Pat has been amazing. And being how he is the father of the Royal Rumble, and we're about to get into Royal Rumble season, it makes you look forward to seeing what they might do for the Rumble in honor of Pat Patterson.
Yeah.
So I definitely love how, you know, through the tragedy of his passing, they've done a really great job of honoring Pat Patterson, and that's my positive.
Okay. There's a lot for me to choose from, positive in wrestling this time. I think I'm going to have to go for the whole Kenny Omega thing. Mainly not because of the way it's been executed or because of how good the promos have been, because they haven't been great, right? But because of the potential that's there, right? If it delivers on even like half the potential, then yeah, it's gonna be amazing, right? Be it giving a certain impact AEW dream matches, be it leading to other, because he's already mentioned that he's going back to do some stuff at AAA, right? Like leading to more cooperation between other companies.
I think also the last time we talked, there was an ouster in New Japan Pro Wrestling of the
president. Yeah, because Harold Major had been out, and he was the main obstacle,
for an AEW New Japan potential partnership. So
yeah.
I definitely agree with that. You know, the potential of everything that could come out of that, you know, just a matter of execution.
Yeah. I think that, especially if it's handled well in the other companies as well, right? Impact definitely did something right on their show where they kind of were like, this isn't going to be good, right? Like Tommy Dreamer going to Scott D'Amore and being like, the locker room are going to fucking hate this dude. And then Rich Swann being like, I'm the world champion. And they were like, no, the real world champion, the AEW world champion. And Rich Swann being like,
but then also, like, and this is something that you told me, like, on at least on Twitch, what they're doing for the breaks was they're showing matches.
All right, so Impact show a lot of classic
content,
right? So while they're on commercial for AXS, what they were doing on Twitch was showing old matches from Impact that included AEW talent in some way, right? So like the very first one they showed was Kazarian doing something. And then it was the Motor City Machine Guns versus I think it was Mark and someone, Buck, aka the Young Bucks, right? And then they showed one with Taz on commentary, and then they showed an Awesome Kong one, and then they showed...
Wait, who?
Awesome Kong.
Who hasn't been on television in forever?
Right, but she's still under contract for AEW, right?
True.
And then they showed a Sting one, and then like it was very clever, very clever.
Which comes to the one point that you said that Impact was pretty much doing it right.
Yeah,
you know, because they were like they're taking the advantage of going, hey, you know, we have an AEW audience here. Let's show them some stuff from when these guys who are now in AEW were in our promotion.
I feel bad for Impact because unless someone from AEW is on Impact next week, their numbers are going to tank again. Yeah. Like, the idea was to raise interest in Impact, right? And that's not what happened. What happened was a bunch of people sitting around going, has Kenny said anything yet?
Yeah, I know
even
one
though,
thing.
Even though you had matches like, you have wrestlers like TJP and Chris Sabin and Rich Swann and Willie Mack and Moose and Chris Bay and Tyre Valkyrie and Deonna Purrazzo and you had so many talented wrestlers. Everyone was like, but Kenny.
Yeah.
At least on Twitch.
Yeah, I know for a fact that with like one thing that I read is that they're supposed to apparently do like Kenny Omega versus I guess Rich Swann on Impact. And then apparently the Good Brothers, Gallows and Anderson, are gonna come over and take on the Young Bucks. That's something that I read.
There's definitely some dream matches. Like, I mean, the one everyone's talking about is Sami Callihan against Jon Moxley, right?
And that's because of the history those two actually have with each other.
Yeah. I'd really like to see what's his name? The non-beefy member of Team Taz.
Richie Starks?
Yeah. I'd love to see, like, Ricky Starks against, like, half of the X Division. Like, Ricky Starks is so good. He's, like, one of the unsung heroes of AEW at the moment. Ricky Starks is so good. I'd love to see, like, Jungle Boy against a couple of people. Dude. Sign me up for Luchasaurus against Moose just hoss fighting each other. Right? Like, I don't know.
Moose
could be some interesting stuff for the women's division as well, right? Like, Abaddon against Sue Young.
Yeah.
Abaddon against Rosemary. Britt Baker against Taya Valkyrie. You could do so much from the with the various divisions.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be interesting to see. I mean, and
I'd be Allen in the X division, dude. Like, sign me up.
And here's the thing. I mean, we don't know how far this is actually going to go.
Oh, I hope it doesn't. I hope that's not where they go with it, right?
Well, I'm thinking like if you want to have like maybe an ending, I think the last place that you could have it end would be at AEW Revolution.
No, I think what's going to happen is this is going to go for a very, very long time, because I think what's going to happen is Kenny's going to end up sort of he's going to kind of go around and collect belts from other companies, right? And he's going to be lording it over AEW. And I think that's going to be when we eventually get Hangman taking the belt off Omega, which depowers Omega a little bit. And he goes and starts losing the belts in the other companies. that'll be like Hangman, like sort of coming to the rescue of AEW and finally living up to that promise that he's had all along, right? Like, but one of the things AEW does very, very well is having long title reigns for its champions. So,
yeah, because what was it? Jericho's was
180 some days.
And then Moxley was like 9 months.
200 and something, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they're definitely good about that.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I just think that I don't want to call it like an alliance to take down WWE or anything, but when Tony Khan had talked about starting AEW, he was very much insistent that the reason AEW was created was to make the landscape of professional wrestling better, right?
Yeah.
And the more companies that have the more eyes on them, the better.
Yeah.
And I think this was kind of the start of that. And I hope they do end up working with like Ring of Honor and New Japan and MLW. Like, why can't everyone just work together? Why does it have to be a war? Yeah, why can't AEW and WWE get along, fuck's sake?
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I mean, maybe when things... Because I know Triple H was asked on his press call for War Games about the potential of maybe working with other promotions. And he didn't actually... And the person, when they asked the question, they didn't directly say AEW or Impact.
Yeah.
You know, Triple H was like, well, we can, but it has to make business sense to want to, you know, work with them. You know, and he openly said that, like, we're working with these independent promotions who technically are feeding them talent. You know, so, I mean, WWE in a way does, and they've actually been putting up more content of indies on the network. So in a way, WWE is putting eyes on other promotions.
So, right, but...
But not to the same level like maybe what AEW and Impact are doing right now.
It's not even close. Like, if you just look at the numbers that AEW brought to Impact, right? Like, they had double their previous highest rating on Twitch, right? I'll be interested to see what the actual TV
numbers would be.
Actual TV numbers are. I apologize for that yawn. My sleep schedule has been a little bit out of whack. So,
you and me both.
Oh, I can guarantee mine's a little bit more out of whack than yours.
Yeah.
Yours is out of whack because you work in the mornings, so it's at least standardly out of whack. Right, I never sleep during the same period for more than a day in a row. I've got this like ever turning cycle where I'll sleep like 2 hours, and then the next day I'll sleep like not those 2 hours, but like an hour after. My body's broken right now, dude. I've been on bed rest for the last like 10 days, and this is like the second time I've gotten out of that to come and record. So.
Yeah. So, with that, we've actually done everything. We have done the thing. So, Ben, where can the people find you on the social medias, good sir? And I'm a little rusty on this. I haven't done this in a while.
All right. You can find me on Twitter at
Bob T. Goldfish.
You can find all of the stuff to do with Awesome Mania sister show Voices from the Grid over on
txhthockey.com/VFTG,
which you can also find the associated Twitter account at
VFTG_PR.
My columns about my experience are on a little bit of a hiatus right now, mainly because it hurts to type. me fingers no work good. There's a fair broken. That I do the click clack, yeah, to go to ow. So I can't write the usual like 7 to 10 pages every month that I was supposed to, because my hands are fucked, quite frankly. So that's on hiatus. It will come back once my hands have recovered from everything they're coming through. Can I say this?
Sure.
About what's happening in a couple of days?
Oh, that we're going to be recording again?
We're going to start recording season 2 in a couple of days.
Yeah.
Which is going to be really interesting, because this is going to be the first recording I've ever gone into with no handwritten notes. Because my hands, that are very broken. I cannot hold the pen.
Yeah, it's actually funny, because actually when we get off this recording, I'm going back into my tape session so I can get my notes ready.
Right.
Because we're not recording one episode. We're apparently recording 2 episodes.
Which is 5 episodes of Power Rangers.
Yeah, exactly. And I actually have to watch those other 2, but I'm just going to do the entire DVD just to get it, you know, all my notes
ready. Yeah, I think I'm going to have to go rewatch everything. I might have to rewatch everything the day of. So it's because I can't write notes. Because I can't write notes, right? So we'll see about that. And then you can find me. It's again with me being on bed rest. Streams have been few and far between, but hopefully I'll be returning to them in the next 6 sometime. Yes, eventually I will return to streaming. And you can find that at
twitch.tv/321_TV.
Yep. That'll do, pig. That'll do.
Oink. Okay. But yeah, you can find me on the Twitter at @thelindebaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions. I stream on Twitch. I stream Sundays, Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern. Take a look at the schedule to see what I'm playing. Tomorrow, if I have it in on time, I will start playing Cyberpunk 2077. If not, I'll be playing something else. That is twitch.tv/themichaelx75. And then, of course, for everything for me, it's also on txhthockey.com. And for the show specific, /awesomemania. So, Ben, with that, take us away, good sir.
Well, it has been a long time since we've seen you guys, and it may end up being the other side of the new year till we see you again. Hopefully, that is not the case. However, it has been good to be back, but I need to go and rest because my body is about to fall apart. That being said, I'm going to end this the way I end everything by saying, guys, gals, and non-binary pals, the words of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln: be excellent to each other. Party on, non-gender-specific honorifics.
And until next time, whether it be in 2020 or 2021, we will see you ringside.
Peace.